side. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a can just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Sunday, January the 31st, 2021. You're listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope all of you of goodwill are doing well. And on that note, I have been absent for the last, I think it's been 2 weeks today, folks, just taking a little break, especially in the aftermath of what has been a very, let's just say very tectonic 5 years. And just took a break, gave my brain a break, concentrated on some things that required attention here on the home front. And so here we go again, folks. Here we are. And to those of you out there who checked in on me and said, hey, you know, podcast sometime soon, and I said, yes, it's coming soon, and that, you know, it's been a good week and a half since I made those promises. Trust me, when I take a break from the program, folks, it's as much for your benefit as it is for mine, because I insist upon putting out the best material that I am capable of producing. And if I just don't feel that I've got the muscle to put together a program that hits a home run, then I just don't want to do it. A lot of other people don't necessarily operate with the same concerns, and I think that this explains a lot why we have found ourselves in the kind of mess that we're in. I'm hoping to keep the program relatively short today, folks, because I do have some things to take care of on the home front. Today I will be the chief mechanic at Dad's garage and repair shop for my kids who have got cars that need things fixed and replaced. And so I need to get these things taken care of and tended to today before tomorrow starts, because that's when school and work schedules begin anew. And so I have to make sure that these wheels are on the road. And so I'm hoping that this will kind of force us to consolidate things as best as we can. Let's see, also, just a few housekeeping details as well. We're starting the new month tomorrow, and so anybody out there who is in the position, who is interested in helping us with the costs associated with producing this program and running the website, you can contact me at the Ugly Truth Radio Program. That's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program, at gmail.com. And I will put you on the path to purchase, meaning you can, on an online way that you can throw a few dollars our way. Those of you who have my regular email address, obviously you don't have to use the others, the other that I listed. It's still good, at least as of this moment. And on that note, folks, I meant to address this, and I can't remember if I did or not, folks. My memory is not what it once was years ago. I meant to address this on a previous program. Those who have sent kind words and comments concerning the quality of the program, thank you very much. It means a lot to me. You know, I don't consider myself a professional broadcaster or a professional analyst or a professional investigative reporter or anything like that. I really look at myself and what I do, what I've been doing for quite a number of years, in the same way that Mike Piper, our dear and greatly missed friend Mike Piper, how he used to refer to himself. You know, Mike was always the recipient of a lot of very well-deserved praise for his accomplishments and his discoveries. And he always kind of squirmed uncomfortably when people would refer to him as a top-notch investigative journalist, and he would kind of laugh, and he would respond to that by saying that he was just a hack writer with opinions. And that's more or less how I see myself as well, folks. I just happened to fall into this thing a long time ago, not because it was my dream to be a writer or a broadcaster, because it surely was not ever, but rather because I felt morally compelled to do something, to say something. And of course, especially after 9/11, when we saw not only what happened, but those of us with just a few functioning brain cells that could be rubbed together, when we saw what was coming as a result of it. And this is more or less what put me on the path to doing this, and why I continue to do it, because 9/11 is still going on. It's going on every day. It's going on every hour. It's going on as of this very moment that we're having this conversation. Despite the fact that it may not get much talk or play, the same program that was started with the Israeli-engineered terrorist attacks taking place on 9/11, that program has been playing out, and we've just seen, obviously, in the last 2 weeks, or less, actually, since January the 20th, we have seen some very, very big blowback, byproduct, whatever, from 9/11. And make no mistake about that, folks. The reason that Joe Biden is sitting in the White House and stinking it up right now, whether as president or not, is because of 9/11. And this is one of the things that will be going into on today's program. But anyway, those of you who have sent these very kind complimentary comments about the program, thank you. It means a lot to me because, as I said, I don't consider myself a professional. I just consider myself a father and a husband and a grandfather and a citizen who sees that we're headed for some very dangerous weather. And it's my duty to warn as many people as possible, as many people who will listen, to get off the beach before the hurricane hits. Anyway, folks, we're probably going to be a little discombobulated today because it's been, like I said, a couple of weeks since we were together. And yes, obviously, I have been covering lots of news because there's been lots of news to cover. And not, you know, as those of you who follow the website know, I haven't and I don't spend a lot of time hyper-focusing or micro-scoping, you know, in a very microscopic way, all of the particulars dealing with what was the stolen election of 2020. The reason that I don't focus is for the same reason that I never really got into the, you know, the nitty-gritty and the hair-splitting specifics of what happened with 9/11, okay? Two planes flew into buildings, and, you know, an hour or so later, the buildings came crumbling down. And while I know that there is a story in there somewhere that better clarifies, you know, some of the things that haven't really been discussed, at least in an official way, concerning how those planes hit and, you know, how the buildings were brought down. The main topic of 9/11, in my opinion, is the who, what, where, when, why, how of those who put it together, who planned it, who executed it, and who benefited from that. Okay, I think that this is one of the tricks that our enemies on the other side of the civilizational divide, it's a new phrase we're going to be using, folks. In fact, I just came up with it this morning in some commentary that I put on the website dealing with those of the non-Gentile persuasion and what is their, you know, their absolutely fanatical support of the legalized murder of unborn children. The civilizational divide, I think, is a very good way of putting this, because this notion that we have this civilization today, this Judeo-Christian civilization, as many people refer to it, and that there's this, you know, this simpatico symbiosis that exists between those on the Judaic civilizational divide and those on the Christian civilizational divide, that there's this harmony, there's this marriage, this friendship, whatever. And nothing could be further from the truth. Jesus Christ, who I consider to be, you know, the greatest teacher, philosopher, political thinker, you know, when he sent his disciples out, he said, "Behold, I send you out as sheep amidst the wolves." And if there were ever a statement, at least coming from Jesus Christ, that painted the picture in its accuracy, that unfortunately far too many people, especially those on the Christian civilizational divide, have forgotten, or else they have just not considered it at all, at least not in the to the degree that it should be considered, that pretty much sums it up, is that there are sheep and there are wolves, and there is no symbiosis, there's no simpatico. Sure, the wolves love the sheep because the sheep taste really good, and the sheep are not particularly smart, as anybody who has raised sheep, such as myself, can tell you. They are exceptionally unintelligent animals. And so that's the only basis of friendship that exists between the wolves and the sheep. The wolves love the sheep because the sheep taste really good and are relatively easy to catch because, as I said, sheep are not particularly smart. And so, you know, this is unfortunately, I would consider it to be one of the biggest reasons why we now find ourselves as sheep amidst the wolves and basically at their mercy. Anyway, the civilizational divide, as we're discussing it, actually now I've forgotten, forgotten how we got started, and I don't have any clue whatsoever what the thought was that got it started. I was talking about the article in her, on the foreword. Well, I guess we're just going to have to start from scratch. 9/11, civilizational divide, was that it? I can't remember. Yeah, get used to it, folks. It's probably not going to get any better unless they come up with some wonder herb or something else that, you know, I know there's also, there's supposed to be all sorts of things that you can take as Father Time starts to take his toll on your memory. But just get used to it. It's going to be like this probably throughout the duration of this program. Okay, so anyway, gosh, I really wish I knew what I was talking about. In fact, what I'm going to do, folks, I'm just going to pause it, and I'm going to backtrack about 3 minutes, and I'm going to find out what I was talking about, and I'm going to start over. And as promised, folks, we're back, and I did exactly that. I stopped the tape, and I rewound it and found the point at which we veered off of the road and onto some side street that turned out to be a cul-de-sac. Okay, yes, yeah, so what we were talking about was how there are too many people, unfortunately, who nitty-grit, I guess would be a good way, get into the nitty-gritty of these particulars and anomalies involving certain events such as 9/11 and the stolen election that just took place. And why I, at least as far as my involvement in all of this goes, why I don't spend a lot of time doing it, because I think that again, our enemies on the other side of the civilizational divide, here we go, They utilize that to their advantage. They get us hyper-focused on these little things, you know, the bugs on the bark of a particular tree, instead of standing back and looking at the whole forest, okay? They did this with 9/11. They've done it with all sorts of things. And it's not that these pieces of information are unimportant. They are very important. But we have to remember, or at least we should remember, that we need to be mission and end results oriented in our involvement in this. This shouldn't be a merely a hobby or an exercise or a diversion or something like that. This needs to be no different than you finding yourself caged with some wild animal, and now you've got to figure out how either to get out of that cage or to somehow, you know, defeat or even kill this wild animal before it kills you. And that needs to be, and that can only be done, folks, by getting lots of people to think like we do on the, on this issue, and to understand that there's something wrong, and that there are responsible and rational explanations for this. And, you know, for every second, every microsecond that we spend arguing or debating or just even discussing some of the minutiae of these things, and especially today, with as challenged as the average American and the average Westerner is in terms of their attention span, their ability to focus. You know, you're dealing with a civilization of people who are, for all intents and purposes, folks, sleepwalking through life. Okay, they have been bombarded with so much information, and much of it, obviously, very destructive information, meaning it's misinformation or disinformation, but also just the stuff that's diversionary, stuff that, you know, is just meant to pull their attention away from what's important and instead to focus on something that's irrelevant and trivial and silly. You know, I always use this as an example. You know, imagine you've got, you know, a really, really good school. It's really hard to get into. Its standards are very high. It costs a fortune to get in. You have to have a very high IQ. You have to score very high on your entrance exams and things like that in order to get into this school. So it's a school for a bunch of very, very intellectually gifted people. Let's say it's a boys' school, okay? So let's say that, you know, this is the school where, you know, you are going to produce the best and brightest of society. They're going to graduate and they're going to become doctors and scientists and great writers and philosophers, people who contribute to the well-being of a healthy society. But let's say that right next to this boys' school is this girls' school, okay? Just separated by, I don't know, a courtyard or something like this, okay? And, you know, at a certain point in the day, all the girls come out for gym class, and they're out there stretching and exercising and doing calisthenics in full view of our young men who are supposed to be studying calculus rather than female human physiology, okay? It's very hard to keep them focused on the difficult topic and subject at hand when you've got all of these girls out there. So, you know, and that's a perfectly normal, healthy function is for them to be interested in that, okay? But nevertheless, you can see how it doesn't necessarily work to their best interests to have a situation like that. Well, obviously, we're dealing with something much, much more severe, much worse in our world today, okay? It's not just these minor distractions, although they do play a part. It's also the things that are just inherently destructive on a an intelligent, well-functioning mind. Okay, and so in that regard, bringing this thing full circle, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, I haven't spent any time really debating the nuances of this latest stolen election. We know that it was stolen. The question that has to be answered and studied and answered is who did it? Who pulled it off? What do they stand to benefit from it? And again, folks, it all boils back, it all goes back to 9/11. Actually, much, much further, if we want to be honest about it, in which we have discussed often on this program. You know, we're talking about, you know, what, as we've said before, this, what we're seeing now is just the culmination of events that literally began about 6,000 years ago. 6,000 years ago. And it is this civilizational divide, folks, between what is the world of the chosen, the world of the elite, the world of whatever we want to call them. They're Hebrews, Israelites, Judites, Judeans, Jews, whatever, versus Gentile. Okay. This is what we're dealing with today. And, you know, and on that note, I just want to address something very quickly. I had a few of the listeners send me emails in the aftermath of last week's basically non-events that took place when the inauguration was taking place. And they said, you know, Mike Piper was right. You shouldn't make predictions, you know, because you can be right in 99 out of 100 of them, but it'll be the one that you, that your prediction didn't pan out that they'll remember. And I assume that what these two good friends of mine, you know, they were very gentle about it and, you know, basically saying, you know, be careful about, you know, putting yourself too far out on a limb, is that the topic of the previous program's discussion, which was the possibility that then President Trump was going to use the military to somehow intervene with what was going to be a finished crime in the theft of the election, and the fact that this did not take place, well, that we know of, folks, that we know of. Now, it's true, nothing happened that day that we know of. This does not mean that in some fashion President Trump, and I say that in the present sense because I do believe at this point, folks, that he remains president. I think that, again, I'm if I have to put a percentage on it, I am 51 to 49% in favor of the possibility that Donald Trump, President Trump, was sworn in on board Air Force One after he left the White House and went down to Florida, which, by the way, folks, I just found out, interestingly enough, from one of my good friends who's a listener, that President Trump's residence in Florida at Mar-a-Lago is and has been referred to for a long, long time as the Winter White House. I find that very interesting. There's a story behind it involving a rich heiress who gave the estate there at Mar-a-Lago to the federal government, and she did this because she wanted whoever was president at that time to have a place where they could go to get out of, you know, the gray, depressing cold weather in Washington, D.C. during the winter, and where they could come, you know, to, you know, to the nice, balmy, warm, comfortable, beautiful weather in Florida during the winter. And it's been referred to for many years as the Winter White House. I find that very interesting. Anyway, I would just remind those of you out there who thought that I was making the prediction that this was going to happen, that in fact I didn't. I said that it is possible that this is what's going to take place. I said we don't know for sure what President Trump is planning to do. All we know for sure is that he's not going to do nothing. Okay, and so I only point this out as a minor thing, folks, because it's important that we listen closely to what has been said. And to not, you know, again, this is one of the things that our enemy indeed does utilize to his great advantage over us, you know, because our enemies, if it's of the many things that they can be accused of, the one thing that they don't do often is to miscalculate. A lot of, well, not a lot, but some people, I've heard some of these alternative media types with podcasts talk about how stupid they are, stupid the Jews are. And this is simply not true at all. They're not stupid. They are hyper-intelligent And the proof of it is the power and the influence that they have taken unto themselves. And on that note, folks, by the way, I still maintain, as of today, 2 weeks later after the program, that something along the lines of what we discussed on the program, that what if that we put out there as a possibility of what President Trump could have been planning to do with regards to utilizing the military to possibly arrest members of Congress. I would point out that I believe that this was something along the lines, something within the, those parameters is what was planned. And I don't think that we mentioned it on the program or not, but it was just a few days before the inauguration, all of a sudden there was this flurry of news stories that originated with the Washington Post. And this is a very important thing to understand, folks, because the Washington Post is the voice of neoconservatism in Washington, D.C. You have got all the biggies writing for the Washington Post. Jennifer Rubin, Max Boot, Robert Kagan, all of these guys who were the principal players in 9/11 and in the apocalyptic events that came out of 9/11. They all write for the Washington Post. And in this case, what we had were stories coming out of the Washington Post talking about there being a plot on the part of these supporters of the president who were going to dress up as National Guard members and were going to possibly even attempt an assassination on Biden. So the way that I read this, folks, is that this is the way that the deep state prevented President Trump from going forward with whatever his plans may have been with regards to using the military to arrest large numbers of the deep state. Because this is how they communicate with each other. You know, they don't pick up the phone and say, hey, listen, Trump, if you're thinking about using the military to arrest, these players here who are going to be there for the inauguration, by the way, we've got our shooters set up already, and they're going to shoot Biden in front of the entire world that's going to be watching the inaugural process. And guess where the blame for that is going to go? Okay, it's going to land in your lap with an upcoming Senate trial. They don't pick up the phone. They don't send texts. They don't send emails making threats like this. What they do is that they put ideas out there in a mainstream media which they control. And this is how they communicate with each other. No different in many respects to the language that was used in The Godfather when, you know, at the beginning of this war between the various families in New York, the various crime families, they sent Luca Brasi's bulletproof vest to the Corleone compound with two fishes in it. Okay, and that this was a message. This was saying Luca Brasi's dead. He's at the bottom of I don't know what it is, the East River or whatever, Hudson River. So this is what I believe was what took place. I think that something along the lines of what we have discussed, and by the way, folks, you know, all of the circumstantial evidence that something like this was in the works was there for months, and it originated again with outlets such as the Washington Post, where they were talking about for months on end, maybe as many as 6 months, okay, that the possibility that the president might use the military to stay in power, that he was going to initiate a coup d'etat and he was going to do whatever he had to do to stay in power. So, you know, these things were not just thrown out there for filler. Okay, they had information that led them to suspect that possibly this is what he was planning to do. And so I just throw that out there as a little reminder. And also, folks, as a follow-up to that, we don't know what is coming next. Okay. As I said, I don't know, a month ago, we may not see the next domino in this thing fall for days, weeks, or even months. Even months. There's no telling what President Trump has planned. And again, I say that in the present tense, folks, because I believe that Donald Trump, not only was he elected on November the 3rd, but I believe that he was he took his oath of office on January the 20th. And, you know, there are circumstantial pieces of evidence indicating that. The fact that, again, you know, the Washington, D.C. is still a locked-down military fortress. Okay, these seven-foot-high fences, we still have, I think, as much as 10,000 National Guard troops there. And all of this is predicated upon what we have been reading and hearing about in the mainstream media, that there's a plot that is afoot. Trump supporters, that, you know, the Department of Homeland Security issued a threat, a warning in the last week or so, saying that they suspected that there was a strong possibility that Trump and his supporters, that they were going to make a move. So folks, there is something going on here. Okay, this is, I mean, if you could see right now, you know, I'm holding up my hand and I've got my thumb and my forefinger just about an eighth of an inch apart from each other. Okay, that little space in there, in between those two fingers, represents what we know. Okay, now I'm holding my arms as far apart as they can go, and I guess that represents somewhere around 5 feet, something like that. That's what we don't know. That's what we don't know. And so what I would say to those of you out there who think that it's all done and it's a done deal, it's not yet. And President Trump has made this clear. He has he'd opened an office, announced the opening of an office called the Office of the Former President. And from this office, he has been doing, from the winter White House, folks, keep that in mind as well, he has been doing all sorts of things, not necessarily to a lot, the same kind of media attention that other things have, you know, been done. But he's still busy. Now, lest those of you listening to this think that somehow I am filled with hope and exuberance and confidence that Donald Trump is going to rise triumphant again, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I said this 5 years ago, folks, when then candidate Trump was running, and then when he won, I cautioned everybody to temper their enthusiasm. In fact, I did make the fateful step of making a prediction in saying that as much as I supported what I believed at that time, and which I still do to today, to believe what the president wants to do, at the same time, what I said was that I believed that in the end, unfortunately, he would fail. That he wouldn't be able to completely, you know, rescue our bacon from the fire, as the saying goes. He may get some of it out, but for the most part, the bacon was just going to burn. And the reason for me making this prediction was twofold. Number one, because I believed that the tidal wave of opposition that would be brought against him, and this was before he had, before anything had happened, folks, all of the signs were there. I mean, from the days when he had got the nomination for the Republican ticket, all of the signs were there that organized Jewry, the organized forces of anti-Gentilism, were 666% dead set against him and that they were never going to let up. And I said, I believe I said at that time that we have to remember that Superman is just a fictional character. Okay. The notion that even somebody like Donald Trump, that he can withstand the diabolical forces that are going to be arrayed against him 24/7, 365, and that he was going to be able to get through this with some semblance of peace of mind and sanity and psychological well-being was just was not realistic to expect, and that it was entirely possible that he would just say forget it and walk away from the whole thing. And if there's anybody who has the right to do that, it is he, considering what he has gone through. That was the prediction that, okay, and then the other part of my prediction was that America really is just too far gone. Okay, we have the problems in our country, especially those that have been, you know, the cancer is just so advanced. It's down to the bone marrow. And the cure for it probably is worse than the disease itself, because it would be so draining on the body's energy and resources and vitality that, you know, the chemotherapy itself would probably be the thing that kills us. And I'll maintain that, for those of you out there who think that I'm desperately clinging to hope that President Trump is going to rise out of the ashes of this thing triumphant, as I've said before, just on this one issue, folks, on this one issue of the legalized murder of our most helpless and defenseless and innocent citizens, okay, you don't, a nation doesn't engage in the systemic, methodical, systematic slaughter of 70 million of its own most innocent citizens, and that there isn't a heavy, heavy judgment that's going to fall on that nation. Okay, heavy. So even if Donald Trump managed to, avoid war in the Middle East, even if he's able to lower the tax rate, even if he's able to get rid of a lot of regulation that holds us up from, you know, we still have this other really, really, you know, that's the national debt. Everybody, you know, Limbaugh and all the others talk about our national debt and how it's going to kill us one day. Well, the real national debt that we have to pay are the lives of the young people who have been snuffed out. And it's not just through legalized infanticide, meaning abortion, but also the children whose lives have been, you know, children who have been spiritually and psychologically destroyed as a result of what organized Jewish interests have done to the moral quality of our country. Or I should rephrase that, not what they have done, what we have allowed them to do. Okay, through their control of the media and their control that we have allowed them to amass to themselves, control of the legal system so that they could get laws such as Roe versus Wade, well, not made, but, you know, to get the Supreme Court to legalize it, and the Supreme Court to legalize pornography and all of these other pandemics. Okay, it's, you know, this since this is the pandemic season, you know, these are that's the real national debt that is going to sink us as a nation. It's not what we owe the Federal Reserve, but rather what we owe to our Creator for allowing what I consider to be the abomination of desolations to not just be born and exist, but to thrive, which is the destruction of our moral fiber, the destruction of our culture. And those who have paid the highest price for it, who have been the children, and who for generations to come will be suffering from the effects of this. Okay, even if it were today, if all of these things were turned around and the control of the media were put into the hands of righteous Gentiles, you know, that's a term That's a term that those of the Hebrewish persuasion, how they like to refer to Gentiles who basically just bend over and grab their ankles and take whatever the Jews give to them. They call us righteous Gentiles. Well, I'll go ahead. I'll play along and talk about how things in this country, if control of the media and control of our government, control of our money systems and academia, if it were put into the hands of righteous Gentiles, even if it were done today by some miracle, we would still have generations of radiation sickness to deal with. Okay, that radiation sickness obviously being the lingering and long enduring effects of that corrosive force that you heard about at the beginning of the program, that corrosive force eating away at the collective mind and the collective soul of our nation. So anyway, folks, we're just, like I said, I do want to kind of keep the program short today because I have to get out there and fix a bunch of broken down automobiles. So two quick things that I want to touch on. First, what we're going to do is we are going to listen to a sound bite here. Let's see, I got to write this down. 2707. Sound bite here, it's a... it was an interview that was done in the last week or two between Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald. Okay, and the topic of this discussion was the police state that is coming. Okay, now that Biden occupies the White House, and that Trump supporters and right wingers and conservatives and people like that, how they are now being reclassified as domestic terrorists. And what's important about this little exchange that takes place between Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald, who generally I respect both of them as much as I can. You know, Tucker Carlson, even though he is very quick now to get into arguments with neoconservatives such as Bill Kristol and Max Boot, and things like that. Nevertheless, you know, we have to be very fair in our accounting here. The Tucker Carlson, along with people such as Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and others, you know, 20 years ago, these guys helped feed and nurse and nurture this neoconservative monster now that has just resulted, that has just pulled off what is, in effect, a coup d'etat in installing Joe Biden in the White House. Notice I didn't refer to him as President Biden or, you know, that he's, but just rather the fact that he is stinking up the White House. Okay. You know, 20 years ago, when this was the discussion that we should have been having after 9/11, was the very dangerous, corrosive influence that these neoconservatives had and were going to have on future events, Limbaugh and Carlson and Hannity and all the rest of them wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. All right? And I know this for a fact because, as we discussed on a recent program, I made it on to Rush Limbaugh's show right before 9/11, or not, no, before 9/11, right before the war in Iraq began under George W. Bush, and he was taking an article that Pat Buchanan had written, was taking this to task. This article written by Buchanan was entitled "Whose War?" And it was basically just a quick rundown of the neoconservatives, meaning these Jewish spies working for Israel, who occupied high positions in the Bush White House, and how they were, you know, maneuvering the country into destroying another country that had nothing to do with 9/11, and how that this was just going to be the beginning of something much, much bigger that we would pay for in years to come. Anyway, you know, all of our right-wing radio hosts, Limbaugh, Hannity, Carlson, and all the other ones, they wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. And when individuals such as yours truly actually made it through and were able to offer the other side of that perspective, which is say, no, we have to talk about this. These are dangerous people. They have the president's ear. In fact, you know, they're the ones dumping documents on the president's desk for him to sign that are going to light a fire that's going to burn the country down. All right. Anyway, I just say that as a preface to this discussion that we're going to have, because unfortunately, you know, it's more of the same. Now, in this discussion, again, they're talking about the danger that that we right-wingers, we supporters of Donald Trump, the danger that we face because of what's coming down the road, that we're going to be labeled domestic terrorists and all of the rest of that. And they talk about they talk about, let's see, I wrote some of this down, okay, the ruling class elite, and how, let's see, particular stolen election, blah, 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 war on terror, domestic terrorism. Okay, yeah, the ruling class elites, you know, they deliberately avoid the specificity that is necessary in underscoring the danger that we face. Folks, they talk about the ruling class elite because to say neoconservative means that what you're saying, you're talking about Israel, you're talking about organized Jewish interests. Now, are Carlson and Greenwald, are they being dishonest? No. Everything that they're saying is exactly correct. It's 100% true. There's nothing about it that is factually incorrect. And even though it may be 100% correct, it's not 100% complete. And that's the danger that's in it. Okay, so I'll tell you what, folks, what we're going to do is we're just going to go ahead and we're going to play the tape. You can, I'm betraying my age here, folks, because they don't have tape anymore. We're just going to go ahead and listen to this, and then we'll give some commentary on it after.
Not a lot of actual policies talked about at the inauguration today, but the new president, Joe Biden, did declare a brand new war on domestic terrorism, which does seem like the headline. We've been waiting for this for a little while. The country's intelligence establishment seems to be salivating at the thought of treating fellow Americans like ISIS.
No, looking forward, that the members of the Biden team who have been nominated or have been appointed are now moving in laser-like fashion to try to uncover as much as they can about what looks very similar to insurgency movements that we've seen overseas, mm-hmm. where they germinate in different parts of a country and they gain strength, and it brings together an unholy alliance frequently of religious extremists, authoritarians, fascists, bigots, racists, nativists, even libertarians. And unfortunately, I think there has been this momentum that has been generated as a result of, unfortunately, the demagogic rhetoric of people that just departed government, but also those who continue in the halls of Congress.
Oh, an unholy alliance, if you will. Because I am stupid, I speak exclusively in cliches, but I was still able somehow to run the CIA. Which ought to tell you something, a lot, really, about the rottenness of our system. But the headline here is insurgents. What you're hearing is that people who disagree with me or may criticize me are, in fact, insurgents. And, of course, politicians love the idea of this. Brad Schneider, for example, is a congressman from Illinois. He's introduced something called the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act to make it a lot easier to spy on the Americans who are paying for the spy agencies. Watch.
Would you like to see more monitoring of radical domestic movements?
Well, the short answer is yes. That's the purpose of this bill.
Yeah. Short answer is yes. Purpose of this bill. Glenn Greenwald is the most independent of independent journalists. He writes on Substack, where we hope you support him. He joins us tonight. Glenn, this is starting to make me a little bit nervous. Do the rest of us have cause to be concerned about this trend?
Absolutely. A lot of times if you warn of a danger, you have to piece things together in order to demonstrate that it's actually coming. In this case, you don't have to. They're explicitly right. saying precisely what they want to do. The thing that struck me so much about that John Brennan video is it would be one thing if they were saying, look, there's a band of people, 20 here, 50 over here, who wear swastika armbands, who still are in the KKK. There's maybe 2,000. We need to... That's not what they're saying. What he's saying is the exact opposite. Every group he lifted, even libertarians, it's essentially he's defining the insurgency as anyone who has an ideology other than neoliberalism. In other words, other than the ruling class view that is about to congeal and merge with the power of the state. And what they're talking about explicitly, Tucker, is using the tools that they used to take ISIS off the internet, the tools that they used to destroy Al-Qaeda. They're talking about it as a second war on terror. And that first war on terror, no matter what your views were originally at the beginning of 9/11, ended up eroding not civil liberties just elsewhere, but here at home as well. One that is born by name of being a domestic war on terror designed to essentially criminalize any oppositional ideology to the ruling class. There is literally nothing that could be more dangerous. And it's not fear-mongering or alarmism to say it. There are bills pending by Adam Schiff as well that would simply take the existing war on terror legislation always aimed at foreign governments and foreign actors and simply amend it to say we can now do that within the United States.
Who's going to stand up in opposition to this? I don't see any of the corporate Republican caucus really even noticing. I see a lot of people I thought were liberal turn out to be not liberal at all, but more authoritarian. So how do we prevent this from happening? Any idea?
Well, one of the things I'm really hoping for is that we can finally get out of enough people believing that the way to understand Washington is Democrat versus Republican, and that you side with one team and believe they're on your side and defending your interest, and the other team is your enemy. It is not true. There is a ruling class elite that is extremely comfortable with the establishment wings of both parties. They love Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer every bit as much as they love Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney and Marco Rubio and Paul Ryan. Those are the people who they fund equally because those are the people who serve their agenda. Then there's a whole other huge group of people at whose expense they rule. And some of them consider themselves on the left and some consider themselves on the right. And it's time to break down those barriers. I was super enthused to see a group of 8 left-wing politicians, including Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and others, say, we will not allow a new war on terror because we know how dangerous it can be. Let them stand with right-wing members to break down this artificial, false, fraudulent prism that the way to understand Washington is thinking that one of the two parties is on your side. Neither of them is.
I just feel like a lot of people are going to be saving that permanently, what you just said, on their DVRs. And I certainly hope they do, because you're right. Glenn Greenwald, thank you very much.
So there you go, folks. That was Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald talking about some of the dangerous weather coming down the road for those of us who support the president. And as I said prior to that, you know, they're talking about the ruling class elite. Okay. And which is fine. It's true. They're a ruling class elite. But as I also said before, it lacks in the kind of specificity that is needed in order for those of us with a keen interest in living to understand the exact nature of just who they are. Okay, now I'll give you an example of this, folks. And again, I don't want to appear to be overly critical because right now, obviously, Limbaugh and Hannity and Tucker Carlson and some of these other right wingers, you know, they have at least begun to do the process of putting out the fire that they helped start. Okay. And not necessarily because these are great people, but rather because the fires now are getting closer to home. They didn't mind it when the fire was on the other side of the world, meaning in Iraq. It was fine. Go ahead. Set the place on fire. But now the fires have found themselves, are making their way into their neighborhoods. And this is the reason now why there is this urgency on their part to do something about it. Now, I'll give you an example here. So let's take somebody who lives an extremely unhealthy lifestyle. He smokes 5 packs of cigarettes a day. He's a heroin user. He's a meth user. He uses all kinds of recreational drugs. He eats at McDonald's 5 times a day. He doesn't get any exercise. He sits on his couch all day, either doing drugs, smoking, drinking hard liquor, Let's see, what else? He's sexually irresponsible, sleeps around with prostitutes who also carry various venereal diseases and things like that. And he goes to the doctor and he says, "Doc, I just feel terrible." And the doctor, you know, can see the needle tracks in his arms. He can see the blood vessels in his nose indicating that he's a heavy drinker. And he, you know, he can see he's like 500 pounds out of, you know, overweight. And so, the doctor's checking off a list. Do you use drugs? Yes. What do you use? Heroin. How often? 5 times a day. Yeah. Okay, what else? Do you use any other drugs? Yes, I use meth. How often? Oh, about 5 times a day. Okay, do you smoke cigarettes? Yes. How much? Oh, I don't know, 5 packs a day. So he goes down the list. And so so the doctor says to him, "Okay, well, here's my advice." And he throws the guy an apple. And he says, "You've heard the old saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. That's my prescription for you, is to eat an apple a day." And then the guy says, "Well, okay, doc, but what else? What about all these other things that, you know, that I'm doing, you know, my unhealthy lifestyle?" And the doc says, "Oh, okay, yeah, all right, well, you should cut down on your heroin use. You should cut down on your meth use. Instead of 5 times a day, maybe just 2 times a day. Okay. You're drinking. Instead of 5 pints of whiskey a day, bring it down to 2. And your cigarettes, instead of 5 packs a day, let's keep it at 2. And I think that that this would be a good way to, you know, to fix, so that you'll feel better." Now, nothing that our doctor has just told him is untrue. This guy will be better off if he only shoots heroin 2 times a day instead of 5 times a day. And he will be better off if he, I don't know how they use meth, if they smoke it or inject it or whatever, but whatever method it is that they use to get it into their system, if he only does it 2 times a day instead of 5 times, he'll be better off. And, you know, less whiskey, less cigarettes. You know, maybe only 2 prostitutes a week instead of 5. Okay. But you can see, using this little example, how negligent our doctor is. Okay. At which point we have to ask the question, okay, is this doctor just... you know, did he get his medical degree out of a box of Cracker Jacks? Or does he have an ulterior motive here? You know, this guy who's in such bad health, maybe the doctor wants him to die. Maybe this guy's got a lot of money, and the doctor knows where this guy buried it. You know, he buried it out in the woods somewhere. Maybe this guy has a piece of property that the doctor's had his eye on for a long time. And even though our doctor didn't say anything in his diagnosis and prescription that was untrue, nevertheless, you can see how our doctor is guilty of collusion in trying to bring about somebody else's death. So this is how I see these individuals, including, unfortunately, Tucker Carlson and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all the rest. You know, the stuff, now, yes, there are things such as the conversation I had with Limbaugh 20 years ago that were blatantly untrue, okay? At that time, Limbaugh was saying that this neoconservative thing that had become obviously the object of fixation for Pat Buchanan, and which was also becoming an object of fixation with even people on the left side of the political spectrum, or the left side of the civilizational divide, in the run-up to the war. And so Limbaugh shouting this down and saying, no, this is just veiled anti-Semitism and Jew hatred and all of the rest, that was untrue. But now Limbaugh and others, they have turned over a new leaf, right? And they're now trying to put this fire out. But they're still not having the discussion that needs to be had, ladies and gentlemen. And that's where we come in. You see, to a certain extent and to a large extent, Limbaugh and these other people can't have that discussion. Number one, they have no credibility on the issue because 20 years ago, they were shouting down all of any discussion on that regard that has taken place about the neoconservatives, about the role that this corrosive force played in the war in the Middle East, the whole clash of civilizations. Okay, so in that regard, they have no credibility. And also, to that end as well, they would be out of business. They would be out of business, and maybe even worse. Maybe they'd be dead. Maybe they would find themselves suddenly on the receiving end of, you know, serious criminal charges brought against them. So this is where we come in, folks. You see, we can talk about these things. We can pick up the baton where Limbaugh and the others simply can't. But what it requires on our part is competence and credibility. Okay, we can't talk about the role that the organized Jewish interests have played with this recent catastrophe involving the theft of the election and everything being put into the hands of somebody who is, for all intents and purposes, just a sleepwalking, senile, you know, puppet for Benjamin Netanyahu and the rest of them. We can't have that conversation with people involving this very, very touchy topic of Jewish power if we also we're tainted with, you know, bad credit in terms of, you know, Sandy Hook hoax and some of this other crazy stuff that has come out. Now, I bring this up only, folks, because I still am on the receiving end of some people's email list, and they will pass around stories that come out of what I now refer to as the truth movement swamp. Okay, you know, the same people who, you know, they just dabble in, I mean, you talk about drug addicts, people who will just inject anything into their system in order to get that high that they crave so much. Okay, there's no reason for anybody listening to this program who values the truth and who understands the seriousness of the situation that we face, who should be visiting any of these websites or passing around any of these articles by some of these kooks and cranks and crazies. That's the only reason that I bring it up. Because, you know, one of the things that I said 5 years ago, folks, and I'm not, believe me, I'm not trying to make this program an exercise in I told you so. All right. But 5 years ago, when I could see where the trend was with regards to our quote-unquote movement and how you had these very one-dimensional people who only looked at things in a very superficial way, and they're saying, aha, there you go, look at Trump. He's got that Jewish son-in-law. That means he's going to be a puppet for the Jews and for everything else, World War III and everything else. And I, at the time, I said, no, let's not jump to those conclusions yet. And I warned people. I said, look, even if Trump fails with what it appears he intends to do, okay, the benefit to us not allowing ourselves to jump the gun and to assume that he is going to cave in to the demands of organized Jewry, the one benefit that we can take from this is when he does fail, we will not have to live with the knowledge that we contributed to that failure to the tiniest degree. And, you know, this is something, you know, my kids have been moping around now for almost 2 weeks. Really, really distraught over this. Even my little seven-year-old, there isn't a day that goes by where she's not talking about how much she hates Joe Biden and how much she loves Donald Trump and how mad she is that Joe Biden is sitting in the White House. And, you know, I haven't been that much down in the dumps, you know, not necessarily in a really good mood, but not down in the dumps. And my kids, a couple of them, the older ones, they asked, they said, Dad, we expected you to be really, really upset about this. And I said, well, I am. And they said, well, you don't look it. And I said, well, I said, first of all, I know that President Trump is not done. He's got something planned. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's obvious that he has not just walked away from this, and he's got something planned. And we'll find out about whatever it is sometime soon. That's number one. And number two, I didn't really realize this until I was explaining this to my kids, one of the reasons why I'm not as devastated as I normally would be is that I don't have to live with the knowledge that I helped bring this situation about. And here's where I guess, folks, I get to, I guess some people will accuse me of patting myself on the back, but I don't know that that's necessarily it. For 5 years, my website and the program that I did, it was one of the few, if any, voices out there that stayed true to the faith, okay, who didn't buckle one time when something came up involving President Trump to where we said, oh, that's it, he's caved to him. He's, even with the bombing of the empty airfield in Syria, you had the entire gamut of all of the best and brightest within the movement, okay, whether it was E. Michael Jones, whether it was Mike Hoffman, even David Duke, who was a very stalwart supporter of President Trump, Alex Jones, all of them, when the bombing happened, they said, ah, this is it, this is it, he's caved in, World War III any second. And I said, no, let's just wait and see what happens. First of all, were there any fatalities? Oh, no fatalities. Okay, That sounds to me like maybe President Trump or his people got a hold of the government of Bashar al-Assad and told them, hey, look, these missiles are coming. Get your people off the airbase, so that off the airfield, go to someplace safe, so that we can get through this thing and without anybody getting hurt and without World War III getting started. So yes, folks, yours truly was one of the very few, if any, maybe even the only one who said, let's just wait and see what happens before we jump the gun. And so bringing this thing full circle, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, you know, I have a certain, I don't know, I'm not going to say that it's a certain ease, but I'm not at dis-ease over what has happened to the extent that I would be if I had to live with the information, the knowledge that I contributed to that, because I didn't. I didn't. We didn't. The people with whom I work closely on this little endeavor, we didn't. We never caved in against the president one time. And because of that, and it's not because, you know, we were into hero worship or anything like that, but rather because we had a pretty good idea of what it was he intended to do, and that part of his being able to get through this gauntlet that he had to run required that he had to do certain things that on the surface appeared as though he was pandering to Jewish interests, when in fact it was him offering five in order to get six. So anyway, I realize that is very much off tangent. Very quickly, folks, because I'm about to break my promise here. No, I have broken my promise. I think we're going to be over an hour here about keeping it short. Very quickly, I'm just going to say this. I'm going to throw this out there for all of us to think about, to chew on intellectually until we get together again. Was this thing that took place this past week with regards to GameStop. Now, I will not for a millisecond pretend to have any idea of how trading and speculation and all the rest of that works, okay, because it involves money, and there are only two things I know about money. Number one, I need it, and number two, I don't have it. So as far as how the market works now, since it has happened, though, I've been listening to various interviews and explanations about what happened, and this is what I'm going to throw out there as a what if, folks. And again, please, those of you out there listening, pay attention. I'm not saying this is exactly what happened. I'm saying, what if this is what really took place? Now, for those who don't know about it, these various hedge fund concerns, mostly headquartered out of New York City, and mostly headed by those of the non-Gentile persuasion, they have lost as much as $70 billion of hard currency just in the course of about a week's time. Now, we are told that this was done by a group of populist day traders, you know, retail traders, they call them. People, they're not rich. They just dabble in the market, you know, and they make a little bit of money doing it. And that somehow all of these guys were able to coordinate with each other in order to reverse a shorting of some stocks, not just GameStop, but a couple of others as well, to the tune of about $70 billion in these with these hedge fund guys. Now, folks, here's why this is important. Here's the what if. I think that this was Trump and his people who did this. Okay. Now, why do I think that? Well, because these hedge fund people, they were some of the primary people who were against Trump in 2016 and who throughout his 4 years as president worked against him, pushed for impeachment, all of this stuff. Okay. And I think that Trump did this, his people, that they understand. I mean, look, this is Donald Trump. He lived in New York his entire life. He knows how the market works. He knows how Wall Street works. You think that he doesn't know how hedge funds work? And basically what it is, it's called vulture capitalism, folks, is that they, you know, they don't buy stock and then the stock goes up and then they make a profit off it. They bet for companies to fail. And when the companies fail, they win the bet and they get rich off of it. It's quick, easy money. Okay. And what makes it even worse is the fact that when you get these big guys betting against a company and it becomes public knowledge that they're doing that, then guess what happens? The company suffers because of the bad predictions that these hedge fund guys are doing, which means that investors pull their money out of that stock and the stock drops. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyway, the story is that these guys on Reddit, and even that is interesting because we know that President Trump has always been a master of language, a master of innuendo and double entendre and all the rest of that. And we're told that these guys on Reddit organize this populist revolt against Wall Street. And again, folks, like I said, Reddit, you know, as it appears, it's R-E-D-D-I-T. But what if it were, think of it this way, R-E-D-I-T, red it, meaning make it red, okay? As in red states, as in supporters of Donald Trump, you know. Yeah, Reddit is one of these big forum platforms for people to get together. But it just, to me, I find it very interesting that out of all the platforms that were used in order to be the staging point for, you know, what was, in effect, slitting the throats of these hedge fund companies and causing them to lose $70 billion of hard currency. Currency that would have been used, ladies and gentlemen, to bribe senators into convicting Trump at the upcoming trial. So we'll have more information on that on the next program. I'm throwing that out there as a what if. You know, what if this thing is President Trump? You know, he has basically, if indeed my theory is correct, he has just sent a message to the very people who have organized against him, using their money to fund, you know, hit pieces in the Washington Post and to pay off people like Nadler and Schiff and Pelosi and Schumer and all of the rest of that. You know, where does that money come from, folks? All of the money that is used to buy them off, okay? It isn't just campaign contributions. It isn't just lobbyists. These hedge fund guys, I mean, it's if you were a country such as, you know, if you were a country such as Israel operating a deep state within the United States that dictates policy, that corrupts our political system, there is, other than dealing drugs and other forms of vice, which we know that they do, there's no better way to raise easy, effortless, instant cash for those kinds of intelligence operations than hedge funds. No better way to do it. These guys, like I said, they call it venture capital or vulture capitalism. So let's just think about that in the days or however long it is until we get together again, whether or not this was Donald J. Trump's handiwork. I personally think that it was to some degree. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. I apologize. You know, I promised that we were going to go short, you know, no pun intended, that we were going to short the program today, but... Now it looks as if it's going to be one of the longest programs we've done yet. Again, anybody who's interested in helping out with the costs associated with putting together this very fine program can contact me at theuglytruthradioprogram@gmail.com. I will put you on the path to helping us out in that regard, and a very hearty thanks to you ahead of time if you do. Until we meet again, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe, stay sharp.